It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Yeah, g'day, Justin. You said before the final one day that it was almost had the feeling of a grand final. You must be so satisfied then that the team was able to not only win, but win in difficult circumstances with your backs against the wall.
Oh, it was brilliant, Andrew. The wicket in the last game was very different to the first two games, which was nice to be tested on different surfaces. But for our guys to go away with a victory, it's certainly when we left the country, it's amazing the fine line. It's more fun winning than losing. And it was amazing the fine line that, you know, the smiles on our face leaving the country after everything that had gone into it. It was a credit to everyone involved.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Mensel. That was Australian coach Justin Langer speaking to the media just before we recorded this podcast. He's very happy about that final victory. And joining me is another very happy person about the Poms getting towed up in the final game, Jaleesa App, sports reporter for Channel 9. How are you?
I'm really good. Yeah, that was a great game to watch. I got no sleep, but it was good.
Oh, it was fantastic. And in this episode of Cricket Unfiltered, Jaleesa and I are going to go through all the cricket headlines, including Justin Langer responding to the criticism by Michael Holding regarding the Black Lives Matter movement. And then I have a feature interview with Australian women's cricket team star Sophie Molyneux. We're going to talk about the women's team series against the Kiwis that starts this weekend. But let's get into the cricket headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. So as I said, Jaleesa, just got off a Zoom with Justin Langer, and it sounds like there's going to be a lot of quarantine for these Australian players. And Justin said on the Zoom that when they went through the quarantine and the bubbles with this Australian squad when they were in England, the blood drained from their faces. So it's going to be a pretty tough summer, you would imagine, for the players.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. And there's really no end in sight to all of that quarantine because we don't have a vaccine. And even if a vaccine came out tomorrow, it certainly wouldn't be in production quick enough for the cricket season. So it's going to be a really tough slog for them, especially given that they came off being with their families for so long, which you think would probably make it easier because they've had this break. But it's actually just like the tale of two different lives, really, because you've gone from seeing your family all the time to seeing them not at all. And every cricketer that I spoke to over the past few months just really embraced having that time off and being able to be with their families. And I think some of them, they were even shocked at how much they really needed it. So it's going to be really tough for them, but good on them for doing it and getting their heads down and just getting bums up and going on with it.
Yeah, just some of the practicalities of it. Justin Lang is in Adelaide now, quarantining for 2 weeks, and any of the players with this squad that were to go to Western Australia or Tasmania will have to quarantine for another 2 weeks, and then you're going to have players going into state bubbles and coming out of state bubbles. So it's going to be tough. Even the prospect was raised that it'll be the first Christmas in a while that the Australian team doesn't have their families with them. But Justin Langer told a nice story that his dad mentioned to Justin Langer that, you know, the Australian team went to the Western Front last year and saw the great sacrifices made by the Australian soldiers. So it'll be a bit rich if the Aussie cricketers start complaining about a bit of time locked in hotel rooms. And look, you can't take anything away from the quarantine, but that's a healthy attitude for Justin Langer, and he's a good man to be at the helm.
Yeah, it is. And he's always been really big on that, being grateful for your position and being very aware of what a privilege it is to play cricket for Australia. I think if you haven't watched the test, go and watch it, because that's one of the things that he really, in the first few episodes, really instills in the team, how grateful and how lucky they are to be in that position. So it's great to have an attitude where you are appreciative of what you've got, but no doubt, at the end of the day, you're human. And it's, I can't believe that he has to quarantine again going into Perth. That is just, it's stunning that hopefully the state borders open during the season, which it looks like they will if things keep going the way that they are, and it won't be this big a problem the whole time.
Yeah, let's hope so. Now, let's get to the big news in the last week. Australia won the third and deciding one-day international to win the series against England. The world champions were beaten at home for the first time in 5 years in a bilateral series at home. It was a truly sensational game of 50-over cricket. It ebbed and flowed. It started with Mitchell Starc dismissing Roy and Root on the first two balls of the game. And England were two for zero, and you thought Australia's going to flog them. But then they made 7 for 302, with Bairstow making 112. Adam Zampa continued his good form with the ball, taking 3 for 51. And the Australians slumped to 5 for 73 in reply. It seemed all over until Alex Carey made 106 off 114 balls, and Glenn Maxwell 108 off 90 deliveries. They put on 212, which is the highest six-wicket partnership for Australia. Australia won by 3 wickets. What a game, Jaleesa. What a game. Tell me about it. You stayed up all night watching it.
Yeah, it was such an emotional roller coaster. I did stay up all night and watched it. I watched the first little spell of bowling, and I had maybe like an hour and a half nap on the lounge and till the end of our bowling. So I didn't watch the whole spell of bowling, but then I woke up and I thought, so for the start, I thought, oh, we're going to do this easy. When you saw Starc got those first two wickets, I thought, oh my God, we're going to roll through this. And then when I woke up just at the end of when we were bowling, I thought, oh my God, what happened? How did we, so then I had to go and like quickly look at highlights. I then took a tactical decision that I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to have some sleep. I couldn't go to bed. I couldn't sleep. I thought I'll just watch the first few overs. And I am a shocker at this. Once I start watching a game, I can't go to bed. So often if I know that I need to be up early the next day, I won't watch the game at all, because I always just go one more over. And it was the most emotional roller coaster. First of all, Root getting two of our top order batsmen out was just stunning. Yeah, they were great balls. Then when Lumbergine,
the one that got Warner was a ripper.
It was. And I was at the time, I was like, oh my God, why are these guys getting out to Joe Root? But they were pretty cracking balls. So I'll let that go. But then when Lumbergine came in, I thought, oh, okay, all right, we just need to keep him in. He can get us there. Like, I had full faith in Lumbergine that he could get us there. And when he got out, when the run out frustrated me beyond. I was so frustrated with it. And I wonder if it's a little bit of immaturity for Lamborghini. He's not quite got that, I don't know, that decision-making quite right yet, because there was a little bit of time earlier than that when he was batting with David Warner, when there was another run in it and he didn't go. And Warner was sort of said to him, there was another run in that main. So not in a chastising way, but just in a, like, just so you know, sort of way. So I just wonder, maybe he needs to work on that a little bit. That'll just come with experience. But I was just so frustrated when he got out. I thought, oh, this is done. And I watched for a little bit longer and I thought, hang on, are Carey and Maxwell, are they going to do this? And then it was just on. And then when they got out, you thought, oh no, we're not, you know, that's momentum was just swinging constantly. And it was just such an emotional roller coaster. And it sort of got to 5-6 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, oh my God, I hope everyone is waking up and switching their TVs on and realizing the cricket's still on and this is such a good game.
Well, then Mitchell Starc came in and hit a 6 in the last over.
He was brilliant. Like, his confidence going in, he just knew, I've just got to go for this. I just need to go for it, play it ruthlessly, and it paid off for him.
How was work the next day on no sleep?
I've done that quite a bit. I didn't need to work. So that's was part of the decision of staying up. The other two games I had to work, so I didn't stay up. And I made the decision, no, I'll watch this the next day on replay, because I couldn't go to bed if I started. But I've done that a lot, particularly last year in the Ashes and the World Cup. I worked so many days with no sleep and it just rattles you.
I'm the king of the day nap now after a long night's cricket. You just got to get a fit in a nap somewhere, a little power nap.
I just choose to cry sporadically because I've had no sleep.
Well, Glenn Maxwell made his second one-day international ton. He's 6th for Australia in all formats. It was just a spellbinding innings. I mean, the way he was able to target the short boundary, and he did it so easy. That's the one thing that impressed me about Maxwell and Carey. They looked in control the whole time, and you have to say Glenn Maxwell followed my advice from the last podcast where I said he doesn't have to hit every ball for 6, just the odd one. And he seemed very strategic in that innings. He would hit a 6, get off strike, do the same thing next over or 4. He just seemed to really listen to me.
Dear, was it the take of Glenn Maxwell took your advice, or Manners was wrong about Glenn Maxwell?
No, I said he took my advice. That's the good thing. I think I was wrong about Alex Carey.
At the point where both of them, when they both got out, you know, you did, it was a worrying period. But looking back, I kind of felt like that was a blessing in disguise, because then you had Starc come in with this like ruthless attitude of, I'm just going to finish this.
But yeah, Alex Carey, his first ton for Australia, very good innings. I might have been wrong about him. More wrong about him than I was about Maxwell. Do you think Maxwell's wasted batting at 7? Do you think he should be at 5 and Carey at 6 or 7 rather than Maxwell so low?
No, Aaron Finch explained this after the game, straight after in an interview, and he said, Maxwell's our floater. So he said, just depending on where the game's going and what we need, Maxwell is our floater. And I actually agree with him. I think it's so they're willing to push him up if they need to, or leave him where he is.
Mm, all right. Now, speaking of the batting order, I know you've been concerned about Marnus and Smith in the same team. Well, I asked Justin Langer about it. Have a listen.
Oh, did you? Good.
JL, are you looking at, Marnus being the sort of number 4 sort of for the long term in the 50-over game and leaving Smith at 3? Is that the sort of structure you're looking at?
Yeah, not sure yet, in the sense that we've got so many options now. We talked about playing one-day cricket with changing our structure a little bit. We're so clear in Test cricket and T20 cricket. But what I know about Marnus is every single time he walks to the wicket, whether it's in Test cricket or one-day cricket, I mean, his innings the other night was, whilst he would have loved and we would have loved to it for him to have gone through and scored another. We know if an individual batsman scores over 80 runs plus, you usually win most games. So we would have liked him to have gone a bit further. But whether he bats 3, 4, 5, you know, he's playing so well that we've got that flexibility at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. What I took from that is, Jaleesa, that we might actually see Marnus go up to three at some stage, and they leave Smith in the middle order because he's such a good player of spin. Would that be acceptable to you, or do you still think Smith and Marnus can't be in the same team?
No, I'm softening on that they can't be in the same team. I do think they can, but probably just I think it's going to take a bit more experience from Marnus in particular for it to work perfectly. I do think they can be in the same team. I think it'd be crazy to leave them out. That would be a crazy call. But I like the idea. I like that the idea of pushing, having him in three, having Smith in the middle, because, yeah, I mean, Smith can play that spin. But one thing I will say about Marnus the other day was just the energy that he brought when he walked out was mental. Like, was actually mental. Like, there's obviously no crowds, so there's not much of an atmosphere. And you would have thought he was walking out on Boxing Day test. Like, he was like a meerkat on meth. Like, it was just like this, like, constant jittering and moving around. And a lot of people have made that comparison with Smith, but this was nothing like Smith. This was on another level, and just the energy. And then you could hear when he faced the first ball, he's like, woo! And I'm like, all right, yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's woohoo. Like, I like the energy that he brings to the team. And at that stage, they're in pretty dire straits.
Sounds like he helped keep you up that night.
Oh, it did. I was like, yeah, woohoo. Let's get this going. But his energy, and it was really funny to watch him towards the end of the game too. He was sitting next to Cummings, who was just as still as possibly could be, clearly did not want to, nothing to do with going out and having a bat, and just watching so intently, didn't move. And then Marnus is next to him, just jittering. And then he's doing these weird, like, sidesteps and, like, looked like he was playing rugby league, and he's moving, and he's going, I would have been like, mate, stop moving. What are you doing? But I love the energy.
He has a lot of energy. Now, in the last podcast, we were pretty strident, or we got on the front foot with our criticism of the Australian team for not doing anything about the Black Lives Matter movement before the series, and Justin Langer was asked about that by a journalist last week, and I just thought it was appropriate to play Justin Langer's response. Have a listen.
Well, first thing I'll say in it is that Michael Holling is one of the great people of world sport, and certainly our game. He's a person who I personally have great admiration, great respect, great love for, and we store. We all watched his presentation or his heartfelt thoughts at the start of the summer. So, and when someone like Michael says something like that, it's certainly important we all listen to it. In terms of the taking a knee, to be completely honest, we could have talked more about it perhaps leading up to that first game. There was so much going on leading up to us getting here. Maybe we should have thought and talked a bit more about it. What we do talk about it within the team is that we want to have a response that is sustained and powerful, and it can go not just in one action, but sustained periods throughout, not just throughout this series, throughout our summer, but throughout time. So we're looking at ways. I know there's a lot of talk going on within our group about how we can, I know there's a lot of talk going within the Australian women's team as well, on how that we can have a sustained and powerful response to the Black Lives Matters. It's incredibly important. I just hope, and certainly from Mikey's point of view, I hope if it looked like there was a lack of respect there, that certainly wasn't the intention of our team. And we're very aware of it. And as I said, when Mikey says what he says, then it's certainly worth listening to, and we'll be doing that.
What do you think of that response, Jaleesa?
10 out of 10 response. Beautifully handled. Just putting your hand up and going, yeah, you know what, we didn't do it justice. And this is how we've reflected on that. I cannot fault Justin Langer in that. I think it was obviously a massive oversight to begin with, but I think he's given the respect to acknowledge that they were wrong And I think it was a perfect response.
Yeah, but what's not a perfect response, Jaleesa, is where was Cricket Australia on this? Again,
yeah,
head in the bloody sand. Why aren't they offering guidance to the team? I mean, this is not, like, this is a huge issue. You've got teams all around the world doing it. Cricket Australia needed to give them some direction and give them some line, whether it's we're doing it for this reason or we're not doing it for this reason, not just leaving it up the team to talk about it more. And I'm sick of Cricket Australia just stumbling around from one PR disaster to another. You know, they're fighting with the TV networks. They can't even direct their team how to respond to this movement. I think it's pretty pathetic, actually.
Yeah, I tend to probably not agree as strongly as that, but I tend to agree with you that it is, I sympathise with Justin Langer and the team when they do have so much else going on that they probably could have been provided a little bit.
Even if the response is, look, we are going to pay tribute to the movement when we're back in Australia before the home summer, we feel that's more appropriate. Anything would have been better than just sending them over there with no thought put into it.
Yeah, look, I don't want to criticise the media side of things because I think they were also had a lot going on in that period with dealing with other issues, but perhaps at even a higher level.
Okay, all right, fine. We'll just let Cricket make another mistake.
No, I'm not saying that it wasn't a mistake, and I do think it was a mistake, and I think Justin Langer has said it's a mistake. Everyone acknowledges that it was a mistake. I agree with you. There probably could have been a little bit more guidance there. I'm satisfied with Langer's response now, and I think they'll be much more thoughtful and much more aware of it. And everyone makes mistakes, and they could have come out and completely ignored it, or they ignored their mistake, and they could have come out and said and brushed it off. Or that Langer's put his hand up and said, "No, this was wrong. We should have done better. We will do better."
Shouldn't have got to that.
Yeah, I agree. I can concur with you on that. It shouldn't have got to that.
Thank you. Anyway, I just wanted to play that because I thought it was important to give Langer a right to reply to the criticism. All right, just at the end, the headlines, a few quick ones. The IPL has started. Obviously, there's games every night, so you know I'm not going to try and wrap it up, but I will say that the Australians are already making a huge impression. Stoinis made 53 off 21 in his first match for the Delhi Capitals. James Pattinson was steaming in for the Mumbai Indians, bowling to Shane Watson, who was playing for the Chennai Super Kings. So there's just so much great cricket on TV, and I hope the IPL does lift the spirits of the Indian people that are suffering so badly right now with COVID-19. I hope that the IPL does cheer them up a little bit.
Yeah, it's a shame that it can't be there, but did you see the suits that they wore, the Australians that have, yes, they wore to the IPL? They were, if you haven't seen it, go and Google a picture. They're flying over, they were completely suited up, gloves, foot, like they looked like they were going into space.
Looked like astronauts.
They
exactly
did.
And the UAE is hosting the IPL, and we might see a lot of cricket there in the next couple of years. Talks that England v India test series could be played there. The IPL could be there again next year.
2020 World Cup.
Exactly. So
2021.
2026. So the UAE is the centre of the cricket world at the moment. And the IPL is a great TV product. I know crowds add to it, but I've been enjoying it immensely already, even without the crowds. The next headline, it looks like the southeastern region of Queensland is going to host all the white ball games against India. That'll be the Gabba and Metricon Stadium. So the ODIs and T20s could all be there. Again, just Queensland's sporting bubble continues.
Yeah, it does. There's not much of an option, you know, with borders closed and things like that. So good that they'll go ahead. Let's just be grateful at that point.
That's right. And the final headline, and we've got to touch on the pay dispute regarding the TV rights. When we recorded last time, there was speculation that Seven and Fox were not going to pay all their fees that were due for the broadcast rights. That's what happened. Seven and Fox did not pay all the money that was due, just partial payment was made. And surprise, surprise, Jaleesa, that brought Cricket Australia to the negotiating table. Who'd have thought that would happen? Withholding money would actually make Cricket Australia negotiate.
I don't think that Cricket Australia haven't been negotiating. I'm sure that they've been negotiating. I'm sure they're trying their darndest to negotiate. I it's an unfortunate situation. I think we said a lot about it last week.
Yeah, we did. We said a lot about it. And I just, as we speak, though, it seems like they're starting to work through the issues more than they were, say, this time last week. So that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, things leak out in the media and it's hard to know what's going on behind the scenes and things get leaked for certain reasons. So, but I'm sure everyone is trying to work out a solution because it's got to go ahead. It's got to happen. It's got to go somewhere.
That's right.
We'll riot. I'll show it on my Instagram page. I'll just let...
Cricket Unfiltered buys the riot.
We'll show it somewhere. Yeah, we'll show it on... We'll do a podcast.
That's right. Well, that was a Cricket Headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. And last thing before I let you go, Jaleesa, we got some viewer tweets or listener tweets last week. So I tweeted out after the one-day international against England, after Australia won, the five-time world champions beat the one-time world champions in a thrilling series. Great cricket.
You're a shit, Sarah.
Now, then my good friend Andre Adams, the New South Wales bowling coach and former New Zealand international, replied, how many current Australian team players have won five World Cups? Obviously none. But then I replied, well, that's not how it works. But I can understand how a Kiwi could get this wrong because obviously the Kiwis have not ever won a 50-over World Cup. Andre Adams did not see the funny side to that at all and said, I think you meant the Australian team beat the current world champions, but the original tweet sounded small-minded and condescending, just like your last tweet.
The funniest thing about this whole exchange was that he thought you were just accidentally sounding that way. And I'm like, no, yes. That's deliberate. He deliberately means to sound right. Like that. Like, why is he so defensive of England?
I'm not sure, but
you're just a shit stirrer. I shit stir sometimes on Twitter.
Sometimes my sense of humor is lost on people, but they're all facts. All facts. Australia have won five World Cups, the English ones. Well, Jaleesa, we're taking a 2-week break now, so thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Paul, make it.
We're not going to do Can't Let It Go. I had a good one.
Oh, okay. What's your Can't Let It Go then?
Okay, so my Can't Let It Go this week is Bradman's pitch in Bowral. Have you read about this?
No, tell me.
Okay, so there's a development application in for the pitch where Bradman used to play as a child or practice as a child. So I think that he had like a mentor that sort of, when he was a kid, would take him to this pitch that I think is behind a church, and they would play there, and him and his friends would play there. So there's a development application in, and the people of Bowral are very upset that they might lose this piece of history. And I wondered what your take on it was. Is it something we should preserve? Because it's not particularly like a celebrated bit of Bowral, as I understand at the moment. It's just this pitch behind a church. I don't think it's got any signage or anything.
They should definitely lift it up at the very least and take it somewhere else.
It's the cement.
Well, I have to think about this one, but I think we should definitely keep it in some form.
Well, yeah, I mean, from what I understand, the people of Bowral are upset that the development's going to go ahead there. And I'm from a small country town, so I can say this. People in small country towns do not like change. They just don't like change. We don't like things being messed with. So I can understand where they're coming from. But on the other hand, I'm like, we've got so many pieces of Bradman history. Do we need to preserve a whole bit of land? So I'm torn because I'm a very sentimental person. So normally I would be like, put fences around it and preserve it and put a glass cage around it and make sure it doesn't get ruined. But I don't know about this one.
Well, I'm actually going to Bowral for a holiday in 2 weeks on the weekend, taking my kids up. So I'm actually going to find this pitch. And if I might start a protest, I might start a movement to save Bradman's first pitch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Are you going to go to the Bradman Museum?
Yeah, I hope so. If I can drag my family along.
They'll love it. You know what? My nan went with my pop, and my nan knew nothing about cricket. My pop and I used to watch cricket all the time. She adored it. She thought it was the best thing she'd ever been to. So I don't think you necessarily have to be into cricket.
Well, I'm going to check out that, and I'm going to check out that pitch and come back to you on it, Jaleesa.
Okay, please do. And I'd like to hear from everyone else. What do they think?
Well, Jaleesa, thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Again, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Take care.
My pleasure. Bye.
That was the wonderful Jaleesa Apps from Channel 9. And we're going to be joined in a moment by Australian women's cricket star Sophie Molyneux. You might remember her strutting her stuff on stage with Katy Perry after Australia won the Women's World T20 at the MCG in March. So that's to come. Just before we get into that, I want to remind you we're taking a couple of weeks off after this show. So while we're on a break, head to Cricket Unfiltered on Twitter and Instagram at Oz Cricket Pod, AUS Cricket Pod. We love interacting with the listeners there. If you've got a moment, go and leave a review for the podcast on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Coming up after the break, Sophie Molyneux.
Sammy Joe Johnson, and again, a lofted on drive, and that'll be it. It's been a really good innings. They settle for one, and that's 50 for Molyneux.
You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, and joining me now is one of the stars of the Australian women's cricket team, Sophie Molyneux. Sophie, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. So you're in Brisbane preparing for three T20s and three 50-over games against the Kiwis. I know you've had to sort of do 2 weeks of quarantine, but you must be pretty excited to be on the verge of playing some cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you say that 2 or 3 months ago, it actually didn't feel like it would have happened. But, yeah, to be up here in Brisbane and knowing that, you know, we're playing a game of cricket in less than a week, it's the girls are absolutely ecstatic, and we're all coming together tonight for the first time since the World Cup final. So starting to feel real, and, yeah, we're just really excited to get stuck in.
Well, you mentioned the World Cup final. The listeners out there might remember seeing you strutting your stuff on the dance floor with Katy Perry. Have you watched that video a lot now? Have you dancing on stage with Katy Perry and shown all your friends?
I go through phases with it. Sometimes I watch it and think, you know, what a great time. And then other times I'm quite a critic on my dance moves and can barely watch it. So, no, it was definitely, you know, a special moment on a very special day as well. So, yeah, Katy Perry was awesome. She definitely embraced 15 other backup dancers.
Pretty good cricketers, those backup dancers. Now, I want to ask you about the sort of quarantine arrangements with the team, because, you know, we're going to see a lot of cricketers go through what you've been through over summer. And even now, a lot of the Australian team. I know Ash Gardner, for example, in Sydney moved out of her home and moved in with Alyssa Healy, so her family wasn't affected. Has the quarantine or restrictions affected you or your family?
I'm Victorian, so things were a little bit different there and still are a bit different there. So sort of going into that 2 week isolation before flying out to Brisbane didn't look too different to us. It didn't affect the Victorians as much as the New South Wales girls, I don't think. But yeah, I think, you know, personally for me, that it's been just not being able to go home and see my family, because my family are country Victoria. So that's pretty much the big change and challenge. But yeah, coming out of Melbourne and going into these 2 weeks in Brisbane of quarantine, it's been different. It's been a bit of a challenge, but it's been the girls have been great. We've been really lucky to have still been able to train a couple of hours a day, which is, it's been really good for us, because, yeah, we've been able to get a bit of fresh air and sunlight the last couple of weeks, and keep building up to what's going to be a massive series for us against New Zealand.
Absolutely. What's the mental toll like of the 2 week quarantine on you? What's it been like?
Look, I'll be honest, I think it's been like, going into quarantine, I was a little bit nervous, thinking I'm going to go absolutely stir crazy in my room. But where, you know, the Victorians were all on a floor, and we all going really, really well. So very lucky we've got a bit of a common room, and that's become, you know, the place where everyone sort of joins, and, you know, there's been plenty of laughs. We have made plenty of memories over the last couple of weeks, I'm sure we're going to bring up in the years to come. So it's just been a really different experience that, you know, you wouldn't think that you would have to experience it to play cricket, but we have, and you know, I've been really lucky to be able to, you know, get on that plane and fly out to Brisbane and just to be able to do what I love in play cricket as well. So yeah, it's definitely been a couple of different weeks, but you know, all in all, we're pretty lucky to be here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real challenge for players and the management to keep an eye on mental health of cricketers in all forms this summer. Players being separated from their family, long periods of isolation. I think there's a real need to just keep an eye on it because not everybody all the time is going to cope with it that well.
Yeah, look, I think Cricket Australia and the States do a great job throughout across the board in that space, in the mental health space, especially over the last couple of years. There's been, you know, a lot put in place there to protect the players and put that pillar of support in. And I think, you know, that's only just going to be put on a pedestal over the next couple of months. You know, there's with the Big Bash Hub coming up, you know, every domestic female cricketer is going to be, you know, based out of a hub in Sydney for 6 weeks, which, you know, that's 6 months ago. We were never planning or expecting that. So, yeah, as you said, there's definitely going to be its challenges, but I know there's been an enormous amount of work by a lot of people from everywhere to be able to put things in place and make it, you know, as comfortable and as friendly to everyone involved.
Good. That's really important. Now, I read on cricket.com.au that you've all trained really hard, that the New South Wales and Victorian players were separated, but you've been able to train separately. And because you've been, you know, locked up most of the day, when you've got out there, you've really smashed it. That must have been really good for you guys heading into the series to get that intense training in.
Yeah, absolutely. It sort of went up a level, bit like we're all cage lions for the day. We get our 2 hours of training in, and we're you know, we're off the leash, and I just felt like the quality of and intensity of training just went through the roof, which was you know, it was really great to be a part of. And I think it's building very nicely because the rest of the squad are joining us tomorrow, so hopefully, you know, that level of intensity will just probably keep going. And yeah, we've got a game in 4 or 5 days now, so yeah, I think we're well and truly, yeah, excited and ready to go.
Do you think that separating the Victorian and New South Wales players is something they should consider post COVID times, just generally?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was quite funny. The Victorian girls were sort of had 6 months of isolation down our way, so we. Very much so, we weren't sort of used to talking to other people. So we got to our first training, and it felt very odd having to talk to people outside of our bubbles. And the New South Wales girls were a little bit worried about us. They thought that we'd sort of lost a few marbles over COVID because we didn't know how to say goodbye and hello. So, there's always a bit of rivalry, Victoria, New South, but no, it's been great where we've been able to come together at training. We've still sort of been separated to create a bit of a contest, which is really cool, and we're all competitive people. So, yeah, all in all, they're good blokes over there too.
Good. How is your form coming off a long layoff without cricket? How is your form?
Yeah, it's a bit hard to judge, I suppose. We've spent a lot of time in the nets over the last 6 months, but I suppose you got to go into the start of the season feeling, you know, it's a fresh plate, and yeah, I'm really, really optimistic and just really excited to be able to play cricket again and hopefully strengthen some consistency this season. But yeah, all in all, it's been, you know, as I said before, the intensity and quality of training up here has been, you know, through the roof, which I think personally is, you know, you get asked to be able to match that. So yeah, I feel fresh and ready, and we're just really excited to play some cricket, to be honest.
Oh, good. I'm excited to watch some cricket, some international cricket this weekend. I think there'll be a lot of interest around these games coming off the World Cup victory. It's the first international sporting event in Australia since COVID-19. I think they'll get a lot of interest, and you must be excited that you're actually allowed to have some spectators come in and watch.
Yeah, that was great news that we heard that, you know, I think pretty much all of them are sold out now. All 3 1-days and 3 2020s are all sold out. So, and we know, you know, Brisbane people love their cricket and have always been enormous supporters of our team. So the numbers like that to pop up straight away, I think, you know, as a group, it probably made it feel even more real that we were going to go out and play cricket and do that in front of a crowd, because, you know, the last time we played cricket, we're at the MCG, so things are going to look a little bit different. But, yeah, all in all, we're just, yeah, absolutely ecstatic and pumped that, you know, people can come in and watch.
And you and the Kiwis have a pretty intense rivalry on the field. I know you've sort of been quite dominant over them at times, but they're a plucky opponent. What are you expecting from them?
Yeah, I expect a contest there. Everyone speaks about, you know, they've got world-class leaders and players in Sophie Devine, Leah Tahuhu, Amy Satterthwaite. But, you know, you've got the young Amelia Kerr, who's definitely, you know, a world-class player in herself as well. But, you know, the list is deep. And I think on top of that, they're probably the most competitive sporting team that I've ever played against. So there's never a game where you think you're home and host, because they always find a way to fight, and which, you know, is very admirable, and we know that. So we definitely know it's going to be a good tussle between the two teams.
Has your team spoken much about, you know, what the bigger picture is for the team? I know there was a lot of focus put on winning the T20 World Cup earlier this year at home, and you achieved that. So huge tick in the box there. But now with the reset, what's the team sort of looking at now?
It's a good question. We've had a bit of a dry patch there. We went from a massive high of the World Cup final to not seeing each other for 6 months. So that's probably the biggest chunk of time where we haven't been on the road together. So it's definitely been a reset button. It's been a great, you know, it's given us a great amount of, you know, time to be able to sit down and reassess what where we want to go as a team. And I think, you know, we're all pretty much on the same page that we've set a bar and we just want to keep going now, and treat, you know, every series, domestic cricket, we all just want to, you know, keep pushing ourselves, because we know, you know, there's any team out there are just, you know, getting better and better. So looking internally, we want to keep raising the bar as well, because, yeah, you don't want to settle on that either. But yeah, I think that's just sort of taking it series by series, not looking too big picture, because I think we're all sort of learning that now with everything happening in the world. You can't look too far ahead, but yeah, we're definitely, you know, want to go up another level, that's for sure.
The 50-over World Cup was due to be played early next year, but that's been delayed. Obviously disappointing, but I guess when they eventually play that, that's going to be, you know, a big aim for the team, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like 2022 is going to be a massive year for our team. It looks like there's going to be a 50-over World Cup, maybe a T20 World Cup, and a couple of Ashes series and the Commonwealth Games mixed up in there. So that's going to be it's a year and a half, that one. Yeah, look, we're obviously very disappointed at the time that the World Cup next year was postponed, but at the same time, like, you know, a big scheme of things, it's perspective at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. You're sort of competing in the Aussie team for spots, I guess, with sort of Jess Jonathan or Georgia Wareham. What direction has, say, the coach Matthew Mott and skipper Meg Lanning given you in what they want to see from you and what role they want you to play in the team?
Yeah, I think the beauty about our team is that, you know, we have a number of spinners, but everyone is so different. Like, you know, Jess Jonathan and I are both left arm offies, but we couldn't be any... couldn't be further apart in the way we bowl our left arm offies. So yeah, you know, the direction from leadership and everything right from the start when I played my first game for Australia to now has just been to, you know, it's almost you do you, and the way you know everyone embraces each, you know, each individual player and celebrates what, you know, their roles are.
Sounds like a millennial philosophy. You do
you. What's that? Sorry. You do you.
That's the real millennial way of doing things.
It is, isn't it? There's no cookie cutter nowadays, that's for sure.
So I guess it's just going to be trying to break into that 11. When this series is over, you mentioned you're heading down to Sydney for the WBBL. It's all going to be played in a hub. What are your thoughts around that? It's going to be so different playing all in one city and not travelling around. It's going to be very strange.
It will be strange. I think we're having a bit of a dress rehearsal at the moment up here in Brisbane. But yeah, it will be very different. I think, you know, the way it looks, the hub's going to be, it's going to be like a bit of a bit of an athlete's village, I think, by the looks of it, for all the teams, which is you know, on plan. It looks really exciting and really cool. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those things that you're probably never going to experience anything like this ever again. So we might as well make the most of it. So I'm really excited to be able to get into that hub, and to, I suppose it's going to be a different Big Bash to what I've ever experienced before and probably will ever experience. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for it.
Well, I'm excited because it's in Sydney where I'm from. So hopefully I'll get to see some of it. How much do you enjoy playing in the WBBL? I mean, you play such a pivotal role in the Renegades with the bat and ball and have done so for a number of years. How much do you love the WBBL?
Yeah, it's a world-class competition. Like one of my best memories in cricket come from playing in the red. Had a bit of a core group there that's sort of been there from year one, and you know, been able to run out on the field during the Big Bash next to, you know, some of your closest mates. That's, you know, that's the part that I love about Big Bash. And you know, we've sort of stuck together as a group, as I said, and we're slowly building. So hopefully we can get a couple more wins at the back end of the season, where, yeah, hopefully we can see some good results.
Yeah, how do you think your team's shaping up? I know there's a couple of your Kiwi opponents in your Renegades team. How do you think you're looking for this summer?
Yeah, we're really excited about all this, I think. Having Amy Southwaite's back is really, really exciting. You know, she's been a Renegade before, and she, you know, brings this amazing amount of calmness and experience that levels out the squad. And then you bring in Lizelle Lee, which I'm so pumped to be able to be batting alongside her, not bowling to her, because she's definitely hit me a few sixes over the years. Yeah, inclusions like that are massive. And being able to retain, you know, majority of our list from last season is also a massive, massive benefit as well. So yeah, new coach. So yeah, there's definitely a bit of freshness about it. But yeah, hopefully we can go okay this year.
Yeah, I hope so too. I don't know about from the players' point of view, but from, you know, sort of journalist/fan, I love going to the WBBL because there's just such a great spirit around the games and the men's team tournament as well, but especially the WBBL. Every time I walk out of a game, I just feel good. Like there's kids and families and you know, the players are so invested in helping everyone have a good time. I just think it's been, you know, so good for cricket and, you know, really uplifting. I hope this competition can do the same. Do you sort of feel that from your side of things?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's extremely infectious, that that family sort of feel, you know, there's kids running around. It's very, you know, it's colourful. It's, you know, it's been, like it's been a really, obviously a big success over the last 6 years. So to be a part of it, it's been, as I said, it's obviously, it's a great part of the year for all involved. And yeah, being able to play in it is, it's been amazing. It's my favourite time to play cricket. So yeah, I think the way that Cricket Australia, Big Bash and everyone have made it so like colourful, exciting and family orientated, I think that's definitely contagious and has an effect on the players as well.
And you players have fun when you're playing?
Oh no, we hate it. That's such a bad time. it's very fun. It's, you know, T20 cricket, domestic level. It's just, yeah, it's a great patch of the year for us girls. We love it.
Oh well, good to hear. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was great to have you on. Best of luck against the Kiwis in these six matches, and then we'll see you in Sydney for the WBBL.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Great to have Sophie Molyneux on the show. And as I said a couple of times, we are taking a break after this episode for a couple of weeks. And there's no actual real big reason for that. But on a personal level, I am struggling a little bit for motivation around Cricket Unfiltered. Been podcasting every week on cricket for 7 years now. Done over 400 episodes and I still love it. But just at the moment with the situation and everything, I'm feeling a bit flat. So thought it would be a good time to just take a little break, refresh, watch some IPL, sink my teeth into some high-class international cricket, and then hopefully I will be refreshed and recharged and ready to go. So enjoy the cricket, enjoy the IPL, enjoy the international women's stuff, Australia taking on New Zealand in three ODIs and three T20s. Can't wait to watch that team in action again. Thank you to Jaleesa Apps and Sophie Molyneux for joining me on this show. Best wishes to Paul Dennett. My intrepid co-host is taking a break this week, and we'll be back soon. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.